This is the son of PCJ.
Media Network Plus, produced and presented by Paulette McQuarrie and Keith Perron.
Well, hello everyone. It's really nice to have you with us once again. Coming up on the program today, we're going to be looking at the world's largest and most competitive media market, India. The country has a population of 1.2 billion people, and there's a boom happening in all media forms. We're going to be joined on the program by the director of the Indian Institute of Mass Communication. Also on the program, we're going to be telling you about the very interesting audio feed from Radio New Zealand International. So, stay tuned. This is Media Network Plus, the show that hopes one day to have an intergalactic interview with someone from the planet of Zulu Salma. First, here's Paulette McQuarrie with a look at some of the headlines from the world of media.
Veteran journalist David S. Jackson has been named executive editor of the Washington Times, company president and CEO Larry Beasley announced last Wednesday. Mr. Jackson is a former correspondent for Time magazine and director of The Voice of America. He started his career in newspapers and later served in senior news management positions, overseeing online broadcast and print operations. After the terrorist attacks of September 11, 2001, Mr. Jackson created and edited a public website for the Defense Department devoted to news and information about the war against terrorism. In September of 2002, he was appointed by the U.S. Broadcasting Board of Governors as the 26th director of The Voice of America, the nation's leading international broadcasting service that provides news and information in 44 languages to audiences around the world. Under his leadership, VOA's global audience grew by one-third to nearly 120 million people, and VOA's website was named one of Google's top 10 internet destinations for international news. The Obama administration imposed financial sanctions last week against officials and government bodies in Iran that the U.S. blames for jamming satellite broadcasts and blocking internet access for ordinary Iranians. Thursday's action is the first foreign policy announcement since President Barack Obama won re-election. Spokeswoman Victoria Nuland says those targeted include Reza Taghipour, Iran's Minister of Communication and Information Technology, and Iran's Ministry of Culture and Islamic Guidance. Nuland blamed Taghipour for ordering satellite broadcasts to be jammed and for restricting internet connectivity. Deutsche Welle is changing satellites for improved reception in Africa, the broadcaster announced recently. Deutsche Welle is now broadcast on KU band on the SES-5 satellite at 5 degrees west for reception in Africa. The change will make it easier for viewers to tune in with their own DTH dish. The change to SES-5 on KU band has been effective since September and makes it possible for viewers in Africa to tune into Deutsche Welle at home with a small satellite dish ranging from 80 to 180 centimeters. The BBC World Service has urged all its network news journalists to consider voluntary redundancy as it aims to avoid compulsory layoffs as part of £42 million in budget cuts. The BBC's global arm is closing 73 editorial posts following its cut in funding by the government in 2010. Post closures include 16 in network news, which includes domestic journalists based around the UK, 14 in world service news, and 2 in news gathering for world and business. In a recent email message urging staff to consider voluntary redundancy, Stephen Mitchell, the BBC's deputy director of news, said, "We are committed to avoiding compulsory redundancies where possible and have previously been very successful in achieving this." NBC Networks has paid $250 million to televise the English Premier League in a 3-year deal that begins next season. They'll show every match from the world's most popular football league, taking coverage away from Fox and ESPN. The Barclays Premier League is the preeminent soccer league in the world and is on the cusp of exponential popularity growth here in the U.S., said NBC Sports Group chairman Mark Lazarus. The company has shown Major League Soccer since last year and had success with its soccer broadcast during the London Olympics. Unlike its criticized tape delay with the Olympics, NBC will show Premier League games live, Lazarus said. English language broadcasts will primarily be on cable channel NBC Sports Network, with Telemundo and Mundo used for Spanish coverage. For these and other media news stories, visit the Kim Andrew Elliott blog. You can find a link to it at the PCJ website, which is www.pcjmedia.com. Just scroll to the bottom of the homepage and you'll find it there. That's the news and media for this week. I'm Paulette Macquarie.
And you're listening to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International. Heard on the World Radio Network, Sky Digital, Sirius XM, and on great partner stations everywhere. Now, India has a population of 1.2 billion people, just short of a few million, making it the second largest population in the world. Now, the only difference between, let's say, India and China, China being the largest population in the world, is India happens to be the world's largest democracy. In India, there are hundreds upon hundreds of television channels, thousands of small and large newspapers, plus an emerging online news culture that more than 100 million people access daily via the internet. So, the media in India is definitely flourishing. To look more in depth at the media in India, we have on the program today Sundit Tandon. He's the director of the Indian Institute of Mass Communication in New Delhi, India. He speaks next to Richard Aidy.
You see, all technologies exist in India simultaneously. So you still have a lot of people bringing out little sheets on letterpress, would you believe it, in various parts of the country. I mean, for instance, in Aizawl, which is in Mizoram, in the northeast of India, the part of India which is beyond Bangladesh, we've set up a branch of our institute there recently. There I was amazed to find that there are about 30 or 40 local papers in a small town, which is hardly, can barely be called a city by any standards. But most of them are single-sheeters brought off on letterpress in the local language. And these kind of papers persist everywhere. India has a huge number of small and medium newspapers, which are done with very low technology. But there has been, over the last few years, a consolidation and expansion of the sort of corporate media houses. That will continue, I'm sure, because with more investment coming in, the bigger chains are expanding and they're reaching out to more and more markets. They're opening up new editions all over the place. So I think that print expansion is going to continue for at least another 15, 20 years. It may, in the English language, start seeing a hiving off, a falling down in the next 5 to 10 years, I suspect. But other than that, I think the print journalism has a very healthy future. As far as television is concerned, I think we've reached a kind of saturation level with a number of channels. We have 800 channels approximately in India, of which about 70 to 80 or maybe close to 100 are news channels, of course in different languages and serving different regions and different markets. So most of these channels do not earn back their money. It's as simple as that. And they're being propped up by other business interests or other interests, let's put it that way.
Or they're acting as a kind of propaganda arm of a wider concern.
Absolutely. It might be a corporate interest, it might be political, but that's what they are.
What about radio? How much of a player is that?
Now, radio is a very interesting position in India because in all this discussion, we haven't mentioned the state player, which is Prasar Bharati Corporation, which has two arms, All India Radio, which is the radio wing, and they have radio stations all over the country in all languages. They have the news. And we have Doordarshan, which is the television arm. But as far as radio is concerned, privatization was allowed, but it was only allowed for entertainment, for music and so on. To date, radio stations are not allowed to broadcast news and current affairs in India. It's a strange dichotomy. Television is, radio is not. They've been told that if they want to do news and current affairs, they have to take it off All India Radio, and they can rebroadcast that news. So that is the position as far as journalism on radio is concerned. But at the same time, radio stations are expanding. We are going to have another round of auctioning of FM radio licenses. So this has been in the it's been on the cards for a long time, and it's going to be happening anytime now. So suddenly we'll see an increase in radio stations by another maybe 600 more stations coming up in the next 2 or 3 years.
Can I ask you, because you said before something really interesting, which was that all technologies exist in India at the same time, from the essentially almost the hand-cranked-out pamphlet to, I imagine, to in the larger places, broadband. How much internet access of news is going on now?
It's increasing, particularly with the English language, but also with the other bigger linguistic groups like Tamil and Hindi and so on. I believe the latest figures are something like about 100 million people with internet access. That's not necessarily broadband. That's internet access. And I was reading a recent report that somebody who should know has predicted that by 2020 we'll have about 600 million internet users in India. So it is expanding, not as fast as China, but it is growing. And people are beginning to access news much more online.
What are the most pressing concerns facing the Indian media from your perspective?
The most intense debate that is going on in the Indian media nowadays, and amongst media watchers particularly, is that of content regulation and having some kind of watchdog, particularly for the electronic media. For the print media, we do have something called the Press Council of India, which is supposed to defend press freedom as well as chastise those who transgress borders or limits. But it doesn't have much by the way of powers to punish. It does have a kind of recommendatory role, some kind of moral authority. As far as the television, electronic media is concerned, there is nothing. And there's a huge debate. The channels want to have some kind of self-regulation. They've tried to set up something, but it's proving not to be very effective. The credibility of media, because it's very free, is a bit at stake. And we've had major reports in India, you may be aware of them, that during the last elections, there were cases where newspapers were being paid to publish stories favorable to various candidates. So this, what we call the paid news phenomenon, is something that is of great concern to people in India at the moment.
That is corruption by any other name, isn't it?
Absolutely. There is no doubt about it. And the fact that it's been highlighted in recent times means that the credibility of the media is under doubt.
What about wider corruption? Because in the last figures that we saw from Transparency International, the NGO that concerns itself with corruption, India had slipped down the list a bit and is now regarded as the 95th least corrupt country in the world. Corruption's, I would imagine, a big news story. How well is it being covered?
It's being covered extensively. We've had, I'm sure you're aware, recently many exposés of really multi-million, if not billion-dollar scams. And these are being investigated. They are having tremendous political fallout as well. And you can't escape from reporting on these scams and the corruption.
I suppose I wondered, because there is an extent to which media outlets are owned by companies or families that also have extensive other interests. And you can imagine it would be very easy for there to be a conflict of interest within the one concern.
Well, you've put your finger on it, because on the surface, the media is very free. And the hidden agendas of the media are not always apparent, because the business interests of the people who own the media do certainly have an effect on what is reported. But on the whole, given the fact that different media groups have different interests, I would say that you do get a fairly fair reporting, balanced reporting, if you look at the larger picture.
How well do you believe the news media is serving ordinary citizens in India? I ask because John Lloyd of the Financial Times and the Reuters Institute for Journalism did a piece recently in which he argued that the Indian news media does pretty well for the middle class, the people with some money, but not nearly so well for the many, many more who are struggling.
I haven't read that particular piece, but I wouldn't argue with that. The fact is that any newspaper or media enterprise does well by its readers, by its consumers. It is an industry, after all. And the fact is that the people that are not so well represented in the readership or the viewership their interests are not so largely reflected in the media. That's in the nature of the beast. But having said that, it's not true to say that the bottom half of the population is totally ignored. There are many, many publications which do devote some space to reporting on issues which concern rural life, the villagers, the schemes that are going on the ground. So it's not completely unreported or completely ignored.
He was saying that for many people, the diet that is served up to them in the papers that they read is essentially celebrities and cricket and not much more than that.
That is true. And films. You forgot to mention films.
Oh, that's right.
And fashion is becoming big as well. Yes, Bollywood, or so-called Bollywood, or whatever wood it might be, because you have different woods in different parts of the country. But then that is the nature of the middle class.
But you would argue that there are enough publications that report well on the enormously complicated and diverse country going through some big changes pretty well.
There are, but you have to look for them in the sense that if you're interested in finding out about those stories, you will find them. There are some serious publications. There is a very small, but now suddenly it's emerging as a fairly significant strand of long-form journalism. There are a couple of magazines, if not two or three, which do in-depth reporting on various issues, and a few newspapers which are still very serious about reporting serious issues.
Sunit Tandon, the director of the Indian Institute of Mass Communication in New Delhi, India, speaking with Richard Aidy. You're listening to Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio.
Call the PCJ answer line at country code 44-20-3286-1399. That's country code 44-20-3286-1399 and leave your comments and questions. On shortwave, satellite, and the internet, this is PCJ Radio.
Now, believe it or not, we do get emails from people asking us what is an interval signal. Now, as you know, from time to time, we feature interval signals on the program, but unfortunately, we don't go into much explanation, and I think partially this is my fault, because I automatically assume that you'll know what it is. Well, unfortunately, there are some people who don't. Now, just to explain a little bit what it is, there was a time when many international broadcasters, before their transmission, maybe 2 minutes or 1 minute, would play a piece of music or a jingle that was identified with that station. That was to let listeners know that on that frequency at that time, that station would begin a transmission. Now, there are some broadcasters today that still do run interval signals. One of the most famous ones around the world is Yankee Doodle Dandy, which is heard before every Voice of America transmission. There's also the one from the Voice of Korea and China Radio International. But unfortunately, those who are, let's say, not familiar with international shortwave broadcasting wouldn't know this. Now, in case you weren't aware of this, because if you listen to a lot of these international broadcasters online, like the BBC, for example, you're not going to hear the interval signal before the top of the hour. That's the normal procedure across the board. However, I just discovered this past week that is not always the case. One station that I listen to quite frequently is Radio New Zealand International. They broadcast 24 hours a day to the Pacific region. Now, usually I listen to them at certain times when their transmissions can be picked up where I live. But the other day I decided, well, you know what? Propagation conditions are bad, so I'm going to tune into them online, which is what I did. And guess what? They run their frequency changes and intervals when they change frequencies. So I listened a little bit longer this week and discovered that the audio that they're running is the direct audio going from master control to the transmitter site. Now, if you go to the Radio New Zealand website, find out the frequencies and when they change frequencies, and then tune online at that time, you can hear the same thing. And it's quite amazing because in some ways, when I was listening, it was like listening to, well, the old days of international broadcasting. So this is what it sounds like when Radio New Zealand International does a frequency change. If you've heard it on shortwave, well, you can tune away for a couple of minutes. But if you haven't heard it before, listen in, because it's quite interesting and a little bit of fun, too.
That's news in Samoa from Aotearoa, New Zealand. I'm Tiuli Malau for Radio New Zealand International.
Fafte lava, kia ora. It's now 11 minutes to 8 o'clock. Coming up shortly, we'll have the news in Nguyen with Shana Hukui. Change of frequency in a minute from now, moving to 11725 kilohertz. That's in the 25-meter band AM and DRM to 15720 kilohertz in the 19-meter band. That's in a minute from now. Nice to have you join us. The time is now 9 minutes to 8 o'clock. Time for the news in your way. This is Sana Hukui. Good morning.
Good morning.
And there you had it, the frequency change that takes place on Radio New Zealand International at various times during the day. And it is quite unusual because many international broadcasters online don't relay that through their internet streams. So if you want to listen to it, actually, it's kind of fun. Go check them out online at www.rnzi.com. That's www.rnzi.com. Now, last week on the program, we were telling you about two books that we're giving away. Well, they're not two different books. They're two of the same books. The book is called The Age of International Broadcasting, Radio Canada International, 1945 to 2007. It was written by Elisabetta Olahoska, and she was at one point the head of the Eastern European Language Section at RCI. Now, if you want to have a chance to win a copy, send us an email. Our email address is mnp@pcjmedia.com. That's mnp@pcjmedia.com. And next week, all the names will be going into our fishbowl, and we will announce the two winners of that fascinating book. Now, what can we expect propagation-wise over the next 7 days? Here's our propagation editor, Dan Hensley.
Here's propagation for the week from November 17th to November 23rd, 2012. The 10.7 centimeter flux starts off November 17th at 145, November 18th and 19th, 150, November 20th, 145, November 21st and 22nd, 140, November 23rd, 135. The A index is 5 on November 17th and 18th, jumping up to 8 on November 19th, back down to 5 the rest of the week from November 20th to November 23rd. The KP index is 2 on November 17th and 18th, 3 on November 19th, November 20th to November 23rd. The KP index will be steady at 2. We had a geomagnetic storm underway recently. A moderately strong geomagnetic storm was underway on November 13th as Earth passed through the wake of a CME that swept past our planet November 12th. High-latitude sky watchers were advised to be alert for auroras. Along with this propagation news, we see the return of sunspots. 1605 is passing out of view this week, leaving us with sunspots 1609 through 1615 in view. At the time of this report, AR 1613 and AR 1614 pose a threat for M-class solar flares. There have been no large coronal holes on the Earth-facing side of the sun. Back to you, Keith.
All right, thank you very much, Dan. Guess what? We're now out of time. Once again, if you want to enter the lucky draw for those two books that we're giving away, The Age of International Radio, Radio Canada International, 1945 to 2007, send us an email, mnp@pcjmedia.com. You can also use the same email to let us know what you think of the program. If you wish to listen to this program again, as well as all past editions, visit our website, www.pcjmedia.com/Media Network Plus. To end off today, for all our listeners in India, we're going to listen to a very classic song from Bollywood cinema. It's called Yan Pachan Ho by a very well-known Indian singer who's no longer with us, Mohammed Rafi. So, on behalf of Paulette Macquarie and Dan Hensley, this is Keith Pallon wishing you all, hoping that you can join us again in 7 days' time. 73s to you all, and 88s to the ladies.
जान पहचान हो जीना आसान हो जान पहचान हो जीना आसान हो दिल को चुराने वालों आंख न चुराओ नाम तो बताओ जान पहचान हो जीना आसान हो जान पहचान हो जीना आसान हो दिल को चुराने वालों आंख न चुराओ नाम तो बताओ जान पहचान हो जीना आसान हो शाम जवां यूं ना चली जाए आती है शाम जवां यूं ना चली जाए फिर से ना आएगी या किसी के बुलाए फिर से ना आएगी या किसी के बुलाए फिर से ना आएगी या किसी के बुलाए जान पहचान हो जीना आसान हो जान पहचान हो जीना आसान हो दिल को चुराने वालों आंख न चुराओ नाम तो बताओ जान पहचान हो जीना आसान हो